Wow, what a shock. Patrick Kane's not coming to Buffalo? I guess I'll have to go turn in that Sabres Kane jersey. I mean, come on, did anyone fall for that? He's not going to play. This is the final time. And no offense to Patrick Kane. He's had a great career. He wants to go back to where it all started. Fine, great for him. But this is it. This is the final time where there can be the rumor, does Patrick Kane come to Buffalo? He obviously wants to finish his career where it started, in Chicago, and good for him, right? Look at Alex Tuch. Alex Tuch was from Central New York, said it was a lifelong dream to play for the Sabres. They make the playoffs. Alex Tuch doesn't re-sign with the Sabres. So, you know, it is what it is. But I think now we don't have to worry about that rumor coming back in 2 years, right? Patrick Kane, would he be 40 by then? Going to play for the Sabres? Ah, come on. And it wouldn't have made sense. Like, there really wasn't a place for Kane on this team. But there you go. Patrick Kane going back to the Blackhawks. How you doing? Happy Thursday. Hope everyone's having a great day. We will continue the discussion we've had for the last two shows after the news. I am so thankful for those of you out there that are sending in emails, messaging me on Facebook, letting me know, you know, really the extent of these toxic findings, right? These chemical findings, these former dump sites. And, you know, to take the words from Scott yesterday, let's continue digging. They want us to stop digging. Let's keep digging. And we'll get more into that after the bottom of the hour news. But now we are joined by a man who has spent decades in the radio industry and unknowingly has a piece now of Buffalo tattooed onto his arm. We have Ben Airy on the phone. Ben, welcome to Buffalo. Hello, Ben. Did I press the wrong button, Tanner? Well, that's the phones for you. You know, we can put a man on the moon, but we can't figure out phones. Is that, this is going to have to be a question for Ben, is that one of the most consistent things of radio, right? You look back at radio in the 60s and 70s, in the 90s, there's always been an issue with the phones. You know, I remember listening to Sandy and Tom back in the day, right, when more phone calls were on landlines than cell phones, and you still had calls dropping out. You still had phones. You would go to someone and they weren't there. But now with cell phones, I mean, my gosh, I was driving through northern Niagara County on the phone with my mother, and northern Niagara County, and the signal went out. It was Burt, Niagara County. I don't know if there's any waste dumps there. That's not why I was there. I was there for something else. Now we have Ben Airy on the line. Ben, welcome to Buffalo.
Hey, glad to be here.
Now, you unknowingly got a piece of Buffalo, of WBEN, tattooed on your arm. I first saw this picture without any context, and I was like, look at this, a dedicated WBEN fan. Tell us how it came to be.
Well, I've been in the industry for 30 years this July, so I thought I would get a tattoo of on my arm, and it was actually a little project, science project I did as a kid, and on the sign I put WBEN, as in Ben, my name, and so I had that tattooed on my arm, and with a tower and all that. And then my coworker sitting next to me, he goes, you know, let's look up and see if there's a WBEN. So lo and behold, there's a WBEN in New York. So I got on Facebook and I just I sent a picture of it to you guys.
That's right, WBEN, the voice of Buffalo, now on Ben's arm. And Ben, you know, when I see something like that, I've got to say, this is a guy who's as big a radio nerd, if not bigger radio nerd, than me myself.
Oh, yes, I am a radio nerd, believe me. My wife will a Ruffle attest to that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it was your tattoo. That's when we go live on XM. We're actually going to use your tattoo as our station logo, if that's okay with you.
That is perfect, man.
tell us your career in radio. Where did it all start?
Well, it started back. I grew up. My dad was an engineer for a local AM FM here in Columbus. And growing up, always wanting to go to the transmitter sites, studios, and all that. Always taking apart TVs, whatnot, putting them back together. One time, if I didn't have it put back fast enough, I was going to get in trouble. And then always building. I built car systems for my friends when they're in high school. I DJ'd for our homecoming dances, and when I turned 18. My dad worked for corporate for Clear Channel, and he sent me down to Florida on a tower project to oversee it and also give the guys down there a break on doing remotes so they could concentrate on the tower work. And when I got back from that, I did some work building studios in Cincinnati for a couple years, and then got back to Columbus probably in, that was 96, 97. And then ever since then, my engineering career stayed here in Columbus, became a chief engineer for WNCI here in Columbus. I built the 20 studio facility, all 20 studios in the facility. That's here in Columbus, took care of their transmitter site that's on top of the Nationwide building, on the Nationwide building, and other outlying transmitter sites. I've built hundreds of studios now in my lifetime, and have gone on just to be a freelancer contract engineer, and just. Loving life and loving my job.
So, Ben, as someone who's observed radio for 3+ decades and is still obviously observing it, what would you say, where do you see radio as currently being, and what do you believe the future is for AM and FM radio?
For FM, I see it continuing. I've seen where in studies, cause I mean, I research it here and there just to see where it's going. Around 60% of people still use it in their cars every morning for local news, for traffic, for their sports updates, and even still music for the ride to work. And just people I know and friends and stuff, they still, even for local high school sports, stuff like that. But they still use it. And I believe FM is going to stay. It's not going away at all. Not going away at all. Obviously, it's got all to automation now. No more CDs and carts and all that stuff. But I don't see it going away. AM, I don't see going away because of, there's that AM radio in every car act in Congress or whatever it is that is pushing, because EV vehicles coming out now do not have an AM in the car, and they're pushing for that act for those manufacturers and all car manufacturers of that fact to have an AM radio in it. AM and FM for your national security EAS broadcasts that would come over your radio.
Yeah, we're going to put some focus on that act in the coming days here. Ben, I don't know if you're like me. Like, if I'm in my car at night, I don't want to. I love the Odyssey app. I can go listen to stations all over the country, but I like to scan the AM dial and see what 50,000 watt clear channel I can get.
Do the same thing. yep. Yep, especially if I'm cruising out in the country, because I know I'm going to pick up something. And sometimes you pick up something from across the states if that atmosphere is just right. So.
Oh yeah, I like to flip over to WRVA in Richmond or KYW over in Philadelphia. Those are two of my favorite to pick up at night.
Yeah, definitely. Same here.
Well, Ben, you know, you mentioned automation, and I just missed carts and everything, right? I started working in 2009, and I work with people who still talk about splicing tape and, you know, actually having to do everything physically instead of on a computer. What was that transition like, you know, when you went from having to stack everything and time everything out to now everything's just on a screen in front of you?
Well, for me, my workload went down every week, not having to clean the heads on the cart machines once a week in every studio, and even on the reel-to-reels, which reel-to-reels were used for your phone interviews, and cutting and splicing and all that time that it took for either that DJ or if they're doing a commercial in the prod studio, that production guy, it all made things a lot simpler, and I love the automation stuff, but being from that era, I miss that era of, you know, oh man, you know, the station seemed alive, and you know, when you walked into the radio station, it seemed alive. It's not changed to what it sounds like on the radio, but just walking in, you know, working there per se is what I'm trying to get at.
What I love, you know, you talk about scanning the radio at night, you know, especially like when you're out in the country in the middle of nowhere. I like it because you find these stations, you hear these talk shows, and it just sounds like someone's in the car with you, right? You know, I'm a huge fan of road trips. I like to drive all over the place. And sometimes, you know, late at night, I could go to my phone and stream something, but I want to listen. I want to hear someone talking to me. It sounds like someone is there with me. And I think that's the one thing. You look back through the history of radio, Ben, and when TV became big, well, that's the end of radio. And then when you could put 8 tracks in your car, well, that's the end of radio. Then CDs and now podcasts. It's like radio's always been able to not only sustain, but continue to get better and adapt to technology. And I think it's because, again, nothing against podcasts, but radio is the one thing where it's those people are talking with you, and if you want to join in, all you got to do is pick up your phone.
Exactly, and that's one thing I'll never go away to, is calling in to your local DJ, requesting that song, or to wanting to get in on the talk.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. I love being able to talk with everyone. We got the text board now, so for those people who don't like to hear their own voice, they can text in and let us know what's going on. Now you freelance at Radio Towers. How is the tower site changed over the years?
Going from tube to solid state. Tube, obviously, just like your small tube radio you had. Hopefully people are listening the tube radio from back in the day, or, you know, the tube transmitter were slightly the same, just on a larger scale. And tube transmitters could be really finicky. So you're getting calls all the time in the middle of the night through the week because it did this, or just decided to go off the air for no reason, or this part this resistor burned up, or the tube just failed prematurely, and you just put it in, and you got to tune it to the specs. And yeah, it's changed a lot. It's changed the work a lot. As soon as you stick in a solid state transmitter, you know, you plumb it up to the antenna and all that, and turn it on, and boom, and it's gone.
Have you you have to climb to the top of the towers ever?
I did in my younger years. I used to change bulbs and stuff like that, but not anymore.
What was that? I mean, Ben, I get, you know, there's a roller coaster here called the Superman Ride of Steel, and I'm too scared to go to the top of that. What is that like, climbing one of those towers? How long does a process like that take?
Oh, it takes a while. You just take your breaks and stuff, and obviously it was a lot more fit then. You take your breaks and stuff, but I'm not scared of heights at all. And it, to me, it was a thrill getting all the way up there and see how far I can see. The tallest I've been up was 1,400 feet down in Florida. But that, I was taken up on a cable winch. I was not going to climb that.
Not in that Florida heat. Well, Ben, I love your story, and I've been at WBEN. I was still in college when I started this job 16 years ago. I love this station, and I hope everything you've read about the station is fair and accurate, and I hope you show that tattoo with pride. And we love seeing it here at the station. And I am just glad that the person with that tattoo is big, if not bigger, a nerd about this industry than I am. I could talk radio all day, Ben. I mean, it's been a passion of mine since I was five.
If we were in the same, if I worked for that station, we would be talking all the time.
Oh, my theme song would still be playing because we'd be having an off-air conversation about radio. Well, Ben, thank you so much, and I hope you tune in. Hope you keep on interacting with the station, and like I said, wear that tattoo with pride. And thank you so much for calling in and representing radio.
Definitely, and thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. That is Ben Airy. He is a engineer. He's been in the industry for over 3 decades. He got a tattoo with a tower. I'll put the picture on my Facebook page. He put a picture of a radio tower, right, with the radio waves and everything. And because his name's Ben, he put WBEN. Then you looked up and goes, oh, look, there's this station in Buffalo that's been crushing it for almost 100 years, WBEN. I'm going to learn some more. And he reached out to us. He talked with our brand manager, Lisa Polizzi. And I hope he's proud of what he read about WBEN. And I think we're going to send him some station merch, because that's how us radio nerds are. We like to have shirts from different radio stations and stuff. James Stelliano, Jimmy, is just as much a radio nerd. If you know a radio station in the Northeast, there's a good chance Jimmy has a piece of memorabilia from that radio station. We love our radio here. And if you work in this industry, there's a good chance not only are you a radio nerd, but you know a lot about different stations. And we're happy that Ben is proudly displaying the voice of Buffalo, News Radio 930 WBEN. And we appreciate him joining us this afternoon here on News Radio 930 WBEN on a Thursday. And as you know, this week, the last few days, we've talked a lot about the radioactive land in the town of Niagara. And yesterday we started pointing to other sites in western New York that may be as toxic, may also have concerns. Now, we have a lot of other things to get to today, right? I want to talk more about Jeremy Zellner being challenged for the chair, and we will get to that. Sophie Cunningham made some comments yesterday, and somehow people are saying those are controversial. We'll get to that as well. But I want to continue where we left off yesterday, because I think it's an important conversation. And I think it's important to make sure that we continue to dig up and we continue to ask questions and demand answers from our elected officials. Now, as you know, I asked Tim Kennedy to come on Hardline this weekend. I will give the mayor of Buffalo credit. Mayor Ryan, at least I got a response saying the mayor can't come on. I don't believe he can't find 10 minutes to record an interview, but okay. Tim Kennedy his PR person hasn't even responded to me. That's how much the congressman cares about his constituents. Dennis Hannon is running against Tim Kennedy. He will be joining me on Hardline this Sunday, 10:35, to talk about what's going on in Tim Kennedy's district. Dennis Hannon, who's running for that seat, will join me on Sunday. And obviously, I hold out hope that Tim Kennedy will get back to my text. But again, I'm not going to make any promises. 803-0930, star 930. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about where Tonawanda wants to put a park as we discuss all this on News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN. Can I just comment on that, on Eric Bowen's comment there? And nothing against Eric. I know I've picked on his comments because he's, you know, one of only like two members that will talk to us. But it goes back to this, we need to gain the trust and be more transparent. Yeah, well, it starts, that's all I hear from members of the board. Well, we have to be more transparent. Well, that's on you. That's such an empty statement if you're not actually going to be more transparent, right? It's if you want more transparency, well, then be more transparent. This happens with elected officials all the time, too. You know, the people deserve more transparency. Okay, you're the leader. You're part of the problem. And that goes for everyone on the school board. Right now, you're on the school board. You all are part of the problem. You are either the ones who kept back information when you knew 2 weeks ago, or you haven't called out by name the people who kept that information. So you can say we need to be more transparent. You can say it all day, every day. It doesn't mean anything until you are more transparent. And when people are transparent, they don't say they're transparent, right? They just are. The school board, definitely. We had the guy on the school board, the new board member say, it's about the kids. So far, the last few weeks, the Buffalo school has been anything but about the kids. It's just scandal after scandal. Cover up over after cover up. So I don't want to hear one more board member say, we need to be more transparent. Don't say do, okay? Don't say do. I'm kind of getting a little ticked off about every board member that wants to speak into a microphone. Right, last Monday, it was stare at the reporter, last Monday, it was stare at the reporter and walk away. We did that a week ago, right? Now it's, we need to be more transparent. Well, it starts with you. Stop saying it and doing it. And call out the people who withheld the information. And I still want to know why, if no one on the board knew what was going on, you all voted to waive the 90 days. That doesn't seem a little suspicious to anybody. Yeah, we just waived the 90 days that was part of his contract. Then why was it there? If you honestly didn't know why this guy was resigning, why he was being pushed out, and you just waived the 90 days anyway, you don't demand more answers? That's the first thing. Why are we waiving this 90 days? Why is this guy leaving? Can I have some more specifics before I vote on waiving part of the contract he signed? No one asked that question. So again, it comes back to, it's on you. The lack of transparency is on you. You didn't ask the questions, or you knew, and now you're pretending you didn't know. One of two things has to be true. You know, I might be annoying when it comes to questions, but you better bet I'm not voting on anything if I'm a member of the school board, if I'm a member of the council. You know, I'm not pulling a Nancy Pelosi in voting for it so we can see what's inside. I'm asking questions before I put my name to this vote. Because once I put my name to this vote, it's going to be assumed that I know what's going on. So, sorry, did not mean to comment on that, but that clip in the promo, I had to say something. 803-0930, star 930 gets you on the program. So we continue to see the fallout from, and this is, you know, I hear this from the families involved in the town of Niagara, the four families who have been asked to relocate. And their main concern is, Joe, we don't want this story to go away, right? We don't want this story to leave. And you better believe I'm not going to let this story go away. There are still families living on toxic land. There are still people who are being poisoned right now. And I think there's more than just the four families. I think there's way more families who are unknowingly living on toxic ground. And we have to make sure we continue to demand the answers and demand the attention that this deserves. As we're talking about this at 803-0930, star 930, as we're talking about this, we have Tonawanda, the town of Tonawanda, wants to turn a former industrial dump site into a riverfront park. And again, to me, this is not the time to be talking about this. This is Channel 7's reporting on this story yesterday. Well, it will be in a few seconds. Former industrial dump site could become Tonawanda's newest riverfront park, again from the town of Tonawanda. This is Channel 7. Did I press the wrong button? Well, we'll figure it out. How about I tell you the story? A decades-long vision to transform a former industrial dumping ground into a public waterfront destination is one step closer to becoming reality. The town of Tonawanda is moving forward with plans to redevelop the 55-acre Cherry Farm property along River Road into a riverfront park featuring walking and biking trails, picnic areas, boat launches, and other recreational amenities. Last week, the town board approved a letter of intent with National Grid outlining a proposed lease agreement for the property. Under the tentative plan, the town would lease the site from the utility for $25,000 a year over 10 years. The board also voted to apply up to $1 million through New York's Environmental Protection Fund Local Waterfront Revitalization Program to help fund improvements. Now, John Flynn, supervisor, says, "My first and foremost concern is making sure it's safe." The Cherry Farm property was once used as an industrial dumping ground for steel manufacturing byproducts and other industrial waste. Cleanup efforts that began in the 90s, including installing a protective cap over the site to contain contamination. Because of the cap, Flynn said future development will be limited to surface-level amenities. Again, and I know this is going to sound crazy, and it's going to sound like I'm saying the same thing a million times. I just hope testing is done, right? Because I think that's where we failed so many times, that we didn't have testing. You know, I go back to Love Canal, and why after that, after discovering what happens when with these toxic chemicals and radiation, why did we not do a more thorough test around Western New York? Like our caller from the fall said yesterday, we keep on discovering this stuff every 10 years. Like I said, I want this to be the last time we have to ask to dig. Let's discover it all. From Lewiston to Hamburg, let's discover it all. And let's run the tests we have to run. Because there are at least four families who were failed by the leaders of three decades ago. Let's make sure it doesn't happen again. Former Tonawanda Supervisor Joe Imager is on the line. Hey, Joe.
Good afternoon.
Joe, what do you think about this site for Town Park?
Well, you know, this has been in the works. The Cherry Farm passive recreation park idea actually was first brought up under Carl Calabrese and his administration, and maybe even before him, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And it is something that every supervisor has worked on since then to try and make it happen. The site was landscaped back in the early 90s for passive recreation use. You know, it could never be used for residential use. The landfill was used for NRG by the Huntley plant. You know, that's what's buried there. It isn't radioactive material that's buried there. Yes, it's contaminated waste, but it's certainly something that has been capped for 35-plus years, and something that I believe and the town board believes and every supervisor for the past 40 years and town board has believed would be a great recreational destination for people to come to. So, it took a long time to get to this point, I was happy that we were able to get it close to before I left. I was happy to get it, you know, close to being a done deal, and I was happy to see that they signed a letter of intent a couple weeks ago.
Joe, let me ask, that cap that's put over it, is that the kind of thing that wouldn't break down? That's good until the end of time to hold that toxic waste under the soil?
Well, I'm not a geologist or an environmental person, but I have been told that, yes, it's a cap because it's only going to be used for passive recreational. You're not going to be putting buildings on the site. We couldn't put a banquet hall on that site, as much as I'd love to put one there. You can't go into the ground. You can't go into the ground to put footers or anything else there. So the town is, at least before I left, the town is proposing putting storage units that you see. That's kind of what you're going to see pop up there, I believe. And those are the types of there's going to be no buildings on the site per se. It's going to be used for people to walk around, run around, have picnics on, and then go home. You're not going to be on the site long, and you're not going to be disturbing anything too much.
You know, Joe, with all this talk of what's going on up in the town of Niagara, are there any concerning spots of the town of Tonawanda that you're focused on that could have maybe not radiation, but similar contamination issues?
No, not certainly apples and oranges, in my opinion, and what's going on in Niagara and the terrible things that have gone on up there for a long time. This situation here, like I said, we've been studying it for decades. National Grid, who is the responsible party, who is the owner, they wouldn't be looking into doing something like this unless they felt confident either that there wasn't going to be any issues. So, and we have our own radiation issues over on our other landfill in our town, over on Two Mile Creek Road, that the federal government cleaned up, partially they cleaned up about 8-9 years ago. And that's a concern, because if that is disturbed, that will cause a lot of problems. Not so much on the Cherry Farm site and what is being proposed there. It's going to be a great amenity, in my opinion, to the town and to the residents. And I hope we can get the deal done, or they can get the deal done. I keep saying we. I'm not part of the. it's they now. It's they get it done.
It's going to take some time. Joe, while I got you here, I know you called about this, but I want to know your thoughts because you were talking with about a data center on the former Tonawanda Coke site, and then this moratorium was put in. What are your thoughts on the moratorium?
Well, I think the moratorium, 1-year moratorium, is a good idea because there are questions that have to be answered. Okay, there's no question about that, and I have said that for the last 6 months. When people would come to me about it, and when the developer comes about it. Okay, but I want to make something clear here because I know there's a lot of information out there. I'm not going to say misinformation because I'm not an expert on the topic, but I do have information on the project, the proposed project. And one of the things is water use. Okay, they're concerned about the opponents are concerned about the amount of water that's going to be used and generated at the site, and come back hot water. Okay, we're not talking. I see on social media, millions of gallons per day being used that this data center is going to need. Okay, I've been assured it's going to be 30,000 to 50,000 gallons. That's all. That is nothing. That is nothing. The NRG Huntley plant, they had a permit for a half a billion, that's with a B, half a billion gallons of water to be withdrawn from the Niagara River every day. 30,000 gallons a day for this facility is not going to be an issue in my book. Light pollution, with all due respect to the people who bring up light pollution, this is an industrial area. It's removed from residences are not close to it. They're a half mile away, at least I believe a half mile away from where they're talking about. I watched something on the news today, a piece of TV news, and they were interviewing people with a data center, a large data center being built right next door to this new residential development. Well, that's a dumb idea to put a data center right there. The town of Tonawanda. And this developer is not, I shouldn't say the town of Tonawanda. This developer is proposing to put something in an industrial location, okay? The number one concern that I have and every resident brings up, and it's a legitimate concern, is the energy use, okay? That is a major, major, major concern, okay? And that's got to be addressed. I think there are ways to address it. And we don't have enough time to get into all that, okay? But I think there are ways to address the energy where it is not going to have a significant or any increase on utility rates. Everybody's utility rates are going up. Everybody, you know, I'm sure you've heard it. You know, everybody is complaining about their electric bills recently, okay, and what they've done. There's no data centers being built. So there's a data center doesn't have any impact on your utility rates that are going up now, okay? So we got to make sure, the elected officials have to make sure that the energy consumption at that proposed site is addressed, because there's no bigger user, okay? And I don't think a lot of people realize this. There's no bigger user of electric in the town of Tonawanda than the town of Tonawanda itself. We have our own, they have their own water treatment plant. They have their own wastewater treatment plant. The utility bills in the town, electric bills have gone up in the town over the last 9 months before I left. They've probably gone up 30-40%. Okay, so it's a major concern. Nobody's going to be impacted by more if the energy costs go up at the proposed data center than the town of Tonawanda itself. So we have skin in the game. So I don't believe the elected officials will let that get by.
Be very interesting to keep our eyes on it. Joe, I got to say, I you know, obviously politically you and I have disagreements, but I wish more elected officials and leaders were like you. You take time out of your day, you call in when you hear something being talked about. I've seen you comment on people's posts with questions about Tonawanda. I wish people were as open and available to their constituents as you were as supervisor and continue to be as former supervisor. Really, really appreciate the time.
I'll be honest with you, Joe. I am making this call, Joe, from my backyard, basking in the sun, and I'm loving life. Everything is good.
Well, awesome. Really appreciate it, Joe, and always great talking with you. Joe Imager, former Town of Tonawanda supervisor. And like I said, you know, politically there are things we disagree on, but he just gave us a ton of information on the site that's being proposed here in Tonawanda and the data center that he was in talks with while he was supervisor, and that will be talks that will probably continue during this moratorium. And, you know, he called in with it, and I wish we had more of that. I wish we could get that from Sean Ryan. I wish we could get that from Tim Kennedy. I wish we could get that from other elected leaders. That's elected officials. That's a leader. That's someone saying, all right, well, you know, Joe might push back. We don't agree on everything. Calling in to talk to the constituents. And like I said, I've seen Joe Imager. I've seen Brian Nowak. You know, with people who have voiced concerns, I've seen them comment on those people's posts addressing their concerns. Like, why can't every elected official be like that? It doesn't always have to be this back and forth. We can actually have conversations. And yeah, we might disagree at the end of the day. I just wish we had more like that. And I appreciate Joe Imager calling in. Like I said, I appreciate when Nowak does it, when Hardwick does it, when Nowakowski does it. I just wish we had more of that. Mickey Kearns. I wish we had more of that and we could have more conversations instead of, you know, Sean Ryan going out there and saying that it's conservatives, that it's conservative media that is ramping up political violence. I mean, what did Sean Ryan think he was going to gain from that, right? 803-0930, star 930. We will get right back to your calls after news with Tom Puckett on WBEN. Hour number two. 803-0930, star 930. Yeah, we are still on this topic. And again, I know there's people out there that are probably saying, Joe, I can't believe you're talking about this again. I'm of the camp, I don't want this to go away. I want to demand the answers from people. I want elected officials to do what Joe Imager did. Call in. Assure the people. Because what people are seeing happening now in the town of Niagara is... you have agencies say one thing while another thing's really happening. And now you're learning that there might have been a cover-up for over a decade. We can't have that. Enough's enough. We got to keep digging, and we got to keep pushing our elected officials, the people who are supposed to have our best interest. We got to push them, and we got to make sure that we're getting the answers we deserve. 803-0930, star 930. Mike is in Wheatfield. Mike, thank you so much for hanging through the break.
Hi, Joe. Another contamination site no one mentioned is Gratwick Riverside Park at the border of Wheatfield and North Tonawanda. Now, my dad told me during the 50s, there's a lot of open barrel container, not open, they're just barrels dumped there. They didn't clay cap it. And they dump molten lead, like, or they, well, there used to be an ironworks in the River Road in North Tonawanda, and they dumped it. And I don't know if they were making stuff for the Manhattan Project or what, but this was on the Superfund list, and they put a clay cap over it. But right now, the Canal Fest is on top of it. And during the past years, boat races run there. They have boat launches. They have a running path there, and they do concerts there. So next time the mayor of North Tonawanda comes on, ask him when was the last time, you know, they tested the Gratwick Riverside Park for radiation or chemicals. Because even though the other caller said that you know, or they put a rubber sheet over and clay cap, but there have been leaks. Ask the people in Niagara Falls if there have been leaks by the Love Canal.
That's an interesting question. So I did not know that about Gratwick Park, and of course I saw your call. I looked it up, and in 91, the DEC finalized a contaminant and remediation plan, and like you said, it was capped, and a groundwater collection and treatment system was installed. But as we know, Mike, I mean, after decades there, I think we should follow up on all this stuff, right? After decades, are these things still holding the contaminants and not letting it, you know, seep through the soil?
Well, like I said, plus there used to be what called the Tonawanda Ironworks on River Road, my dad said. And they used to have a little short railroad car with a pot. You know, it's 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. They're taking the impurities out of the iron. I guess they made steel out of it. But these impurities, when they concentrate it, the radiation is concentrated. Now, I don't know. They may have nothing to do with it, but they did dump it there. My dad says you could see at night when the clouds run over, there was, you know, so molten hot, it reflected the red off the clouds. Wow. So if the mayor of North Tonawanda ever talks to you again, ask him about this. Maybe he can look it up. When's the last time they checked the...
Mike, Austin is very good, and he is always available. And
much before his time.
No, but I'm sure it's something he can look up. We will we'll ask him about that, because that's very interesting, Mike. Well, and a lot of people are like me and didn't know it. Appreciate the call, Mike in Wheatfield. Yeah, I'll text Austin during the break. Al in Lancaster. Al, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, Joe, I'd like to give you some examples how you can't trust the government for this pollution problem.
Yeah.
There is a corner of land there on Stage and Ransom and Clarence that at one time, back in the 60s, they were dumping a lot of stuff in the old quarry. And they supposedly got caught by the town of Clarence and put a stop to it. But guess what is being built on top of that old dump? Homes.
Now, where? Ransom and where?
It'd be Ransom and Stage. It is an old quarry, and they have three new homes there. Nice homes, beautiful. I doubted those people know that was a dump at one time. I wouldn't want to live there. I mean, I wouldn't want to put a basement down into a dump. You know, that was heavily used for about a year.
Wow.
And when it comes to this...
I thought we were safe in Clarence, Al. I thought there was nothing... I thought they didn't touch Clarence.
I know. This was being done in the 60s, and I remember going by with the school bus almost every day, and there'd be trucks in there just dumping, you know, their loads every hour upon hour that they could. It looked like basically they were trying not to get caught or told there was a limit that you could, you know, dump here, and then we're going to stop you. But there were also Tillman Swamp. That's another favorite. That was an old quarry along the thruway by the speedway on Worley Road. And that was another one they were selling land to build homes on. And I worked in a post office. The guy asked me any place that, you know, what do you think about Tillman Road and all that? I said, Jim, that's nothing but PCB contamination. And then he asked the people that were selling the land, oh, well, they cleaned that up years ago. Well, how do you clean that up? I don't see a cap. I don't see anything there to collect the pollutants or, you know, that's what they done on the full landfill on Transit Road. I knew her personally. I cut her lawn and had a lot of conversations about it. But basically, they put a liner down and then they put the stuff in there that is, you know, pollution, cap it over, and they put little wells on the side that picks up the water the groundwater that comes off of that land. What they do with the water, I don't know.
You talking about the full landfill?
Yeah.
And yeah, that goes right into Ellicott Creek.
Yeah, and she owned the land right to Ellicott Creek. Also, the land behind Westinghouse's parking lot when it was there. And she told me, and she was still paying the lawyers to protect her family from the lawsuits.
Wow.
Yeah, and she owned a $1 million home there. I mean, she was very fussy about weeds in her lawn and stuff like that. But here, it's what you say, an entire family living off of that. So, in other words, an industry, I call it. He actually made his money building the Curtis Wright plant, which was also known as the Westinghouse plant eventually. And that was another fine little example. Example was the asbestos they were supposed to remove from there. They found out they had dumped it in the tunnel. And a lot of people don't know this. Calspan and Westinghouse have a tunnel underneath Genesee Street that connects it. Well, guess where that asbestos ended up? In that tunnel. And we had to clean it up, the public, you know, the town or whatever, who did it. So, you know, you get people cleaning things up, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's done as well. And this favorite one I just learned recently, and sometimes you'll wonder, the stadium, the old stadium site. They have dug down a pit 68 feet deep and are going to deposit parts of the old stadium in that pit and then cap it over. Now, I understand they took out all the metals, you know, recycled the metals, you know, you make money on it. But I got a funny feeling it would probably be mostly concrete. But who really knows what that's going to be?
Mm.
Yeah, another site that you can't really build on when you think about it.
No, of course. Al, you talk about Calspan. There's a tunnel connecting Calspan to where now, near the airport?
Yeah, where the old Westinghouse plant used to be. Curtis Wright was the first one there.
Okay.
To build it. Westinghouse took it over, and they're right across the street from each other, and that tunnel was connected. They were connected because Westinghouse had the cafeteria there. And my mom and dad worked there, and she said when the doors opened for the tunnels from Calspan, the people come rushing down to the cafeteria. She said it was kind of frightening. It was a big tunnel.
Wow.
So that was wartime strategy there, you know. You know, Curtis Wright was building planes, and the Calspan was, you know, the engineering part. And they were both connected with that tunnel. Kind of a secret tunnel in a way. I wouldn't know about it unless it wasn't for my parents working there.
I am fascinated by, like, history of that. Like, you know, there's tunnels that connect Amherst Middle and High School. That I heard that while I was a kid. Now, if that's true, I don't know. It seems a bit ridiculous, but I'm fascinated by history that, you know, almost nobody knows. And like you said, you only knew because, well, your mom knew, your parents knew. Yeah, that's fascinating to me. But the Full Brothers landfill, you know, Al, as I talked about yesterday, I mean, that's one that's still concerning to me because after any kind of rainstorm, that water's going right into Ellicott Creek. And I've seen kids in Ellicott Creek going down to the, you know, the creek there at Genesee. And it's like, do you know what's in that water?
Well, I had a buddy that rented a place from the Fulls. He knew very well as well. And sometimes a tanker truck would be pulled up there, disconnect the truck from the tank, open up a valve, and just let it pour out solely from the big tank into Ellicott Creek.
Wow.
See, what it is, what these chemical things is that they're diluting the toxicity with the water. And that's why they put up a lot of chemical factories along this area because of all the water we have.
Right.
And then, a lot of people don't know the western end of Lake Ontario has no ability to support life. I was told by a Canadian person, and he, you know, a fisherman, and he says, no, there's no fish there. He says, it's one of the most polluted lakes in the world because it's at the end of the chain of lakes, you know, Superior all the way down.
So that's fascinating, Al. That's absolutely fascinating.
Well, it's disgusting, really. I can't stand the thought of it, that everybody's drinking that water or be around the uranium. I mean, how do you contain uranium? I just can't picture how they're going to do it. It's going to be very expensive.
Wow. Well, Al, this is a lot of insight into this, Al. I really appreciate it. But your initial point, you can't trust government. I'd like to know what the state knows about these sites they're not telling people, because they probably know double what you just said.
Well, yeah, I had a conversation with a DEC woman that she even said she had moved in the area, hopefully to avoid all these problems, because they are familiar. What I was doing is asking for a map to locate these hotspots. I live by an old Nike base. We've been here since 64, and it closed like 2 years later. And you would see the missiles rise up above the berms, supposedly to protect the country. I don't know if they were nuclear, but there is a tunnel that runs from the two Nike bases that run from Peppermint Road to Pavement Road. That was another war strategy tunnel, I call it. And it is still being used for storage now. People do live there. But it makes you wonder if there was any uranium, radioactivity involved with that as well, being that they were missiles, but they weren't that huge ballistic missile type, though, in the ground. They were above ground. But, like, they would have lists that, they would pick up the missile to fire for practice rounds, like, for to see the things actually works, the lifting devices anyway. So, but, there's so many things that it's like you don't even know where your landfill comes from. I've seen fill, so-called fill, that people were using, and they called it sand, but it looked like more like old factory sand where you would make molds out of it to produce products. It has like an oily look to it. It looks very reddish tan. Oh. And it's not a normal sand look to it, like beach sand. And I suspect even around this house here might have it. They use a lot of sand from where? We don't know. But I did have a project about 10 years ago that another company had brought in. And, I repaired her, then they goofed up. And it was supposed to be topsoil. They brought in this sandy-looking junk. And, it's still there. It's under grass. But that's the kind of stuff that aggravates you. You just don't know what the material is from. I mean, I even understand that from the slag from producing steel is slightly radioactive. And they were putting and mixing that in with concrete for the foundations of buildings.
Wow. Wow.
Talk about stupid.
Yeah. Wow. Al, this is all. I really appreciate the insight. I'd love to know more about that site on Ransom Road. I'm going to have to dig into that. That's
Who that's around in the neighborhood. And
wow.
Matter of fact, they have a cancer cluster in that neighborhood.
Wow. Al, really, really appreciate it. Would love to talk with you more in depth in another show. We're going to continue talking about this stuff. 803-0930, star 930. Jack is in Tonawanda. Hello. Hey, Jack.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right, man.
I work for some analytical labs in the area. For 25 years, I worked for one out of Rochester. Now I work for one out of Albany. And I do the courier work for all the different subcontractors that sample all these sites. These sites are constantly being sampled. Weekly, monthly. I mean, it's cut me in an extra paycheck every year, which I appreciate. So just to put people's fears at ease, to think that, the DEC and EPA doesn't know what's going on. They know exactly what's going on. Whether they tell us or not, that's different. But these labs are sampling all of this material, this water runoff from any of these sites all the time so that people, they know what's going on.
So, Jack, with that said, I'll let you finish. But with that said, how does something like the town of Niagara happen where now all of a sudden we're learning that these houses have more than 10 times radioactive?
I agree with you. Yeah, we're talking about radioactive material. But, you know, places like landfills and all that stuff, those are all engineered to catch that runoff water. They're all capped with, not only are they capped, but they are also lined with clay to make it an impervious surface. And then they have pipes put underneath them to take all that runoff. And then all that runoff is monitored all the time. Now, the radioactive stuff, there's a place in Lockport. There's an old steel mill that shut down in Lockport that was a part of the nuclear project that was running nuclear materials. That place is still shut down to this day. I've picked up there several times for the EPA, and they're constantly monitoring these sites, though, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that they're stopping it, but what I am saying is that, you know, they're on top of it. They know what's going on. And just to give people a little bit of, you know, everybody's afraid, and I agree, I understand that, but just so that they understand that, you know, DEC, EPA, and I'm not all for government agencies all the time, but they are doing things.
I just wish they would let us know, Jack, because, when you have something, like this pop up, I think people lose trust that.
And I agree.
Are they communicating
it? No, they're not. Not in the way they should be. But I think if they were worse off, I think that the reason that they were even monitoring that area up in Niagara Falls was because they were monitoring it, and they started picking up on those levels. But the point is that they are monitoring these areas.
For sure. Hey,
okay,
Jack.
So,
Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I appreciate we're up against the news. Appreciate the call, man. Jack in Tonawanda, 803-0930, *930. I do want to get to just two things that I've been waiting all week to get to, but I will, obviously your calls come first. 803-0930, *930. It's Beamer on WBEN. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN. Final segment, 803-0930, *930. Yes, we're continuing to talk about toxic waste and where exactly it was dumped around Western New York. Also, Al brought up that tunnel under Kalispell. I'll tell you, I fascinated. We got to do a show on fascinating Buffalo history. Like that, because like I said, there was always a rumor that there were tunnels underground from the middle school to the high school when I was in Amherst. Now, is that true? I have no idea. But I do like to uncover fascinating history of Western New York. Unfortunately, we're talking about it's fascinating, but not in a good way, history of Western New York. And that is all the places where toxic waste was dumped 70, 80 years ago. Maybe even sooner, like 50, 60 years ago. 803-0930, *930. Paul is in South Buffalo. Paul, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, thank you, Joe. Another area that should be tested is the area on the waterfront where the small boat harbor is. To the left of that, they just built a park, and to the right is all, whatever it is called, Terminal C, Terminal B. Both those areas used to be a big dump site for Bethlehem Steel.
Now, Terminal B, you wonder if that was tested before they put all that before they built the spot that's there now.
Yeah, but the records, I can't remember who dug up the old records, but for a lot of reasons why they're not building over there, it was a dumping ground for Bethlehem Steel.
Wow. Yeah, you just wonder, Paul, what is still in that lake? All the stuff that was dumped and is continued to be dumped in that lake. You wonder.
Yeah. When I was growing up, man, you could see the slag. They were dumping the slag, red hot slag, into Lake Erie from Bethlehem Steel.
Wow. But no one questioned it, right?
No. We were swimming in the lake at that time, not right near there, but opening your eyes in the lake and swimming, and nobody really told you anything.
Gosh, that's so scary, Paul. So scary knowing what we know now, you know?
Yep, it's crazy.
Hey, man, appreciate the call. Paul in South Buffalo. Thanks for hanging on through the break, too, Paul. 803-0930-star-930 on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board. West Seneca West Senior High School has a cool tunnel system and fallout shelter. Yeah, now I know Amherst High School had a fallout shelter. And when we would do our fire alarms, right, we have to go all the way out to Main Street, they would do the old air horn that was on the high school to say, okay, all clear, you can walk back in. You can walk back into the building now. This stuff to me, when it comes to the waste and where it was dumped, we just need transparency. To take the words from the Buffalo School Board, we just need transparency, and we just want to know what the state knows. And I, unfortunately, don't trust the state of New York, and I fear that they know a lot more than they're telling us, and they have for a long time. But like I said, we're going to keep digging here, and we're not going to let this story go away as we continue to follow all that is going on. Now, I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, but on Sunday we'll have John Davis on the show. He is an Amherst Town Council member. He is challenging Jeremy Zellner. And I think we all knew this was going to happen. I think when Jeremy Zellner lost that primary to John Rivera, it was the beginning of the decline of the end of Jeremy Zellner's reign over local politics. I think as days go by, right, like sand through an hourglass, these are the days of our lives. I think as the days go by, more and more Democrats, I feel, will speak out and speak out with, you know, their disapproval of Zellner. And again, I think it all stems from, and maybe we can actually start having an honest conversation with all elected officials when it comes to the 2025 Buffalo mayoral primary. Maybe now we can finally have an honest conversation about what took place, because so far the only Democrat speaking out on that is Joe Golombek. Maybe we can finally have an honest conversation about what happened when it comes to the Buffalo Democratic primary for mayor in 2025. Was it really on the up and up? And especially if Zellner gets voted out, if John Davis is the next party chair, this will be one of my questions on Sunday, will he look into that? Did Zellner go above every other Democrat and move the pieces, selling it as a forum? Because again, you talk to anyone that was in that forum that was not part of, you know, that was not Jeremy Zellner. At the time, you could talk to other people who were running for mayor. Now you could say, well, Joe, they're saying that because, you know, they're upset they didn't get the endorsement. Well, then you talk to Joe Golombek. And what does Joe Golombek have to lose for calling it out? You would say he actually has more to lose for calling it out than to gain. That's what I meant to say. What's he have to gain from calling it out? And Golombek has said that he doesn't think the forums were proper. He thinks that they started the forums already knowing who they were going to endorse. And now, this is me talking. This was all to move the dominoes to get Jeremy Zellner a seat so he could be in the state Senate. Knowing Rivera wanted that Senate seat, Rivera announced his intentions long before Zellner did, right? Saying that if Sean Ryan was the next mayor of Buffalo, he was interested in the Senate seat. Zellner then endorses himself. I'm sorry, you can say, no, Joe, it was the committee. Are they going to vote against the party chair? I mean, come on. Are they going to vote against the party chair? He gets to be state senator. He wins the special election, and then when he was up again in a primary, he gets embarrassed. Let's be honest. He gets embarrassed in a primary. And now I think it's all going to come out. It's all going to get exposed. And yeah, his stock is sinking in the Erie County Democratic Party. He can pretend that's not happening, but I think more people, and don't get me wrong, Obviously, there are Democrats in Erie County who would like to see the socialist movement from downstate take over the Erie County Party. I don't think that's going to happen. I could be wrong. I've been known to be naive. I don't think that's going to happen on a wide scale locally, but maybe it will. But I just think that people are turned off now that they can admit it. Now that people can talk, people are turned off by how Zellner handled the mayoral primary last year in the city of Buffalo. Now, John Davis, he is going to challenge Zellner for the party chair. He'll be on Hardline this Sunday at 10. I've heard there are other names out there. I don't know if anyone else has made it official. But John Davis, again, in Amherst. Amherst has quickly become very blue, okay, compared to when I was a kid. So you would think that, you know, now there's a choice. Are people going to want to continue with Zellner, who pretty much changed leadership in Buffalo so he could be the next state senator? I mean, still, can you tell me what in 8 months, what Chris Scanlon did wrong for his own party to stab him in the back? It's been over a year. No one's been able to answer that question. What did Chris Scanlon, who had just been given the job, what did he do for the party to stab him in the back? All he did was get in the way of Jeremy Zellner getting to Albany. And then John Rivera said, I don't care what you do to my political career, I'm going to get in your way of staying in Albany. And now Jeremy Zellner's no longer in Albany. Well, he will be until the end of the year. He will serve out the rest of the term. But I told you on election night, if you listen to our primary night coverage here on WBEN, I said, watch now. I don't think Jeremy Zellner will be the chair of the Erie County Democratic Party. Now, there's a chance he still wins. I have to do my due diligence and talk with members of the committee and see where they're leaning. But I have a feeling as more days go by, as more people look back on what Zellner's done in the last year, more people will decide to vote against Jeremy Zellner. That's just, I'm not pretending to know how Democrats think, right? But I have a feeling Jeremy Zellner will not win the September election for party chair. We'll have to wait and see. And again, John Davis is challenging him. He's a council member in the town of Amherst, and he will be on this on my program, Hardline. Well, this is my program too, but my Sunday program, Hardline, 10 o'clock this Sunday. Now, before we get out of here, Sophie Cunningham is a WNBA player for the Indiana Fever. And she had the audacity to say that biological men don't belong in women's sports. How dare she? Well, the liberal sports media does not like that. And when I say liberal sports media, I mean The Athletic, which is run by the New York Times. Listen to this liberal male reporter for The Athletic pushing back on Sophie Cunningham, a female athlete, saying only girls should be in girls' sports. Listen to this back and forth.
On that same vein, in that story with ESPN, you talked about wanting to protect young girls who shouldn't have to go against biological men. Just can you expand your viewpoint on that?
I mean, I think I said what I said. I think it's kind of...
Obviously, that was a woman. There's a man that will be asking questions later in this. Just listen.
Kind of common sense. And I think I'll always believe in that. I think it's really important to protect children, and that's little girls who are also involved in that category. And so I stand on what I said, and I always believe that.
Yeah. Do you see your advocacy on that, like, taking any form going forward?
You know, I don't know. I'm not a very political person, but I do have beliefs. I have
advocacy for that. Your advocacy. We need advocates now to say that women belong. Only women should be in women's sports. That men, you know, humans born with male genitalia should not be playing women's sports? We need advocates for that now? I mean, does this not sound insane to anyone else? Are we honestly still having these conversations? I can't believe there are actually people who are upset that Sophie Cunningham, a female athlete, said, yeah, it should only be biological females playing women's sports, be it at high school, college, the WNBA. It's also a sad reality that she is the first WNBA player to say that. Because you would think this is something that we could all come together, especially in the WNBA, right? I mean, how would the WNBA feel? How would the athletes in the WNBA feel if on the 27th, LeBron James announced he's now a woman and he's going to play his final seasons for the New York Liberty? Do you think the WNBA athletes would be happy about that? You say, Joe, that sounds ridiculous. Well, that's how ridiculous these people sound. We'll continue with Sophie.
I have morals and I'll always stand on those and be true to who I am. And I think people are going to take it how they want to take it, but I've never even really said anything about that. And so when it comes just to protecting young girls in sport and women in sport, I feel very strongly about that. I think that's why you have Title IX. That's why you have some of the greats in women's sports. If Title IX and women's sports weren't protected, then you wouldn't hear about any type of women in sport. And so I think in the future, it's just really important to protect.
Do you think, I guess, along the line, like that, it goes against perhaps, some people might say, hey, for the trans community, this could be something that could come back on us or be targeted against us. Like, how do you, I guess, view that sort of critique?
Like I said, I extend love and I don't dislike anyone. Like, I think there is room for absolutely everyone here. And I think there's room to love everyone. And I truly think when you get people in the same room and you have conversations, you actually have a lot in common with a lot of people. And so I'm there to love, but I'm also there to love biological women. And I think that there are rights that need to be protected. And like I said, I'm going to stand true to that. I'll never falter in my beliefs in that, but I have never once said I hated the trans community. Like I said, I think there's space for everyone.
Sophie, what about Connecticut today? Tell us a little bit about the game. What are you thinking about?
All right, so then she talked about the game. Do you think there could be pushback? Hey, as I always say, you know, if you're an adult and you want to do you. I'm just, hey, don't preach it to my kid, right? I don't want it in books in schools. Okay. But if you're an adult and you say, hey, I think I'm a woman and that's what you're into or whatever. Cool. You're an adult. Do whatever you want. Okay. But just know that you've made that decision. That doesn't mean you can now go to the Olympics as a woman, or you can go to college and play women's sports. We're talking about a level playing field. And I just can't believe that there are people out there. Why? Because we don't want to hurt someone's feelings? Hey, yeah, you were born a dude. I don't know what you identify as today. You were born a dude. You can't play on the girls, the girls volleyball team, right? How am I the crazy one for saying that? How is that not 100%? Okay, maybe 99% in agreement. How is Sophie Cunningham getting pushback from sports media reporters? The same sports media that what? Wanted to ruin Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and all these guys that took steroids because that wasn't fair? The same sports media that couldn't, oh my gosh, every day on SportsCenter, it was about steroids. But now that same sports media says, hey, just because you were born a dude doesn't mean you can't play in the WNBA. I mean, are we really to this level of delusion? It's crazy. I'm sorry, it's crazy. And again, that's not, live your life. You want to do what you want to do. Love who you love. Be who you want to be. If you're an adult, you want to make that decision, go right ahead. But don't try to tell me that a biological male who transitioned to a female is now the same and can play in female sports. It's just a ridiculous conversation. And I cannot believe we're continuing to have it. And I cannot believe we have people in sports media that want to continue to push back on that. There's more. I mean, it's The Athletic, USA Today. It is just, it's these are two publications. I mean, the sports section in USA Today, two publications that have just become liberal mouthpieces. I mean, ESPN, that happened a long time ago. But USA Today, some of the things they said, which we're not going to have time to get to, maybe I'll get to it tomorrow. And The Athletic, I mean, The Athletic, this is the same publication that wanted American tennis players at the Australian Open to bash America and got mad when they wouldn't. So we have The Athletic, run by the New York Times, and the USA Today sports section pretending to be sports publications, but really just being liberal mouthpieces. It's a crazy time, guys. Crazy time. Hey, thank you so much for the calls, the texts. I want to thank former Tonawanda Supervisor Joe Imminger for joining the show. I'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Bowerly is next. Tanner, thank you as always. We'll talk tomorrow at 1 at WBEN.